and it was so abnormal that there was this like this weird kind of like, what just? And I remember I was going so fast. I whipped it in the net. And I kind of put my hands up. I'm like,
yeah, that's not going to count.
And then as I skate by the bench, by the thrashers, they're like.
Kevin Sawyer talking about a goal that didn't count, and he tells the story so fantastically. He's one of our special guests here on Ground Control, the official podcast, the Winnipeg Jets. Another special guest is from The Athletic. He is Murat Ateş. Murat, first time, I think it's been a long time. I had you on the postgame show when you first started,
ages ago.
But I believe this is your debut on Ground Control, is it not?
Yes, it is. Thanks for having me.
Special gift package coming your way after this one. As we record this, it's Monday, and the podcast will come out Tuesday, but some days the stars align with themselves, the planets all come together, and you get great news. And the Winnipeg Jets got that today, or released that today, with the extension of Nino Niederreiter. And you've written extensively about him before and the fit here in Winnipeg, but how big of a news is this for the Winnipeg Jets and Nino Niederreiter, in your opinion?
I mean, I think it's a perfect fit, Jamie. I think that from the moment he gets off that plane and he's telling Scott Brown, you know, hey, it's not actually as cold here as I thought that it was going
right.
to be. I think he's been an ideal fit here. He sort of gives that element of just muscling his way to the front of the net. You watch it, any Niederreiter highlight package, and he's at the top of the crease. He's getting there at the right time. He's doing it through sheer will a lot of the time. And I think that Winnipeg's been blessed with such high-end skill and these players that can make these saucer passes on a wire.
Mm.
And they needed a little bit of what Niederreiter does. So for me, it's been an ideal fit. That line just destroys other competition. I think it was 6-1 in goals last year. It's been another year like that. I think they're up to something like a 17-11 or 17-10 lead in goals when those three guys are on the ice. And it's because he's been such a perfect fit for me.
You never celebrate injuries, especially one as bad as Gabriel Vilardi's. But that line, this line, the third line that we have right now, wouldn't have happened, at least at the time that it did happen, without the injury to Gabe Vilardi, because it was Nino Niederreiter, Nikolai Ehlers, and Cole Perfetti to start the year. So I guess not a blessing in disguise, but something that it's amazing how these things work out in some ways.
Yeah, a really good response to a tough situation. Like I got a chance to talk to Mason Appleton a little while ago, and I know you had him on the show. He's just a delight to speak to.
Yeah.
He was saying he felt like there was some unfinished business because he, Lowry, and Niederreiter got together at the end of last season, had some success, but injuries kind of took that away from them. And in a roundabout way, an injury gives them the opportunity to get back together this season and sort of unleash that chemistry all over again against top competition.
I know I've said this a lot. I'm not from Winnipeg, but I get what Winnipeg is, being here for 7 years. You grew up here. You're from here. Is Nino Niederreiter one of those guys that fits what Winnipeg is?
100%. There are, I think, a few elements that make a good stereotypical Winnipegger that speaks to a Manitoban's heart. I feel like being underrated is one of those things.
Yeah.
Right? You grow up here and you're always hearing about Toronto or Vancouver or whatever. And it's like, come on, we do some great work in this city and we punch way above our weight, I would think. I think Nino Niederreiter is a great example of that as well. Making that 4.0 million on the extension. The Athletic's model has him at something like 5.7 or 6.7 million in terms of value.
I mean,
he's underrated in that way. And then that sort of like humble, happy-go-lucky, you know, happy to be here, willing to speak to, like, half his interviews, he's talking about how great the fans are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's that Timu Solani era. This is how you make it in Winnipeg, is you show the people you love them.
Right, and we've seen videos of him, you know, interacting with fans, Swiss fans, you know, coming from a small hockey country like Switzerland. Like, this is all coming together, roses for the Jets and, you know, Niederreiter at this moment.
Yeah, and I mean, the group of kids that he's sponsoring right now, I feel like his day one impact was to kind of get involved with the community. Even at his exit interviews, he was saying that he'd been treated so well by the Jets organization and that he hoped to be here for longer. And that was, he played, what, 20 games at that stage?
Right.
So you don't get that with every player in every city in the NHL. And I think the fact that he signed for 3 more years now is a reflection.
Are you recognizing the organization's push for people that want to be here? Because we hear that a lot from Rick Bowness. Are you seeing it with the players they've drafted, the players they've brought in?
Yeah, I mean, you can go back to probably the Brendan Dillon, Nate Schmidt, Paul Stastny era of acquisitions, where everything you were hearing about everyone was, what, like, wonderful people they were in the room, and they got the job done, sort of deal. And in a situation like this, again, they bring Mason Appleton back. He was a great fit here, acquiring Nito Niederreiter. And then, like you said, Bonus says the biggest difference this season, everybody wants to be here. Mm-hmm. You guys had that huge announcement with Scheifele and Hellebuyck. And what did Bonus say multiple times during that? It was all about everybody here wants to be here. This is a sign. And Nito Niederreiter fitting into that. I feel like everybody's both feet are in this team and in this city. And maybe that's part of what's going into their success.
Well, speaking of success, The Athletic has been around for a long time where, you know, lots of other papers are kind of moving away in terms of coverage. How are you feeling about the staying power of the company that you work for right now?
I mean, just so happy that I get to do what I love to do, mm-hmm. to be honest,
which
Jamie.
We'll get to in a second for sure.
You know, I subscribed to The Athletic before I worked there in any capacity, and it was 2017-18, that amazing year. I was freelancing technically, and then by the end of the season and playoffs, I was writing as often as I could. And this sense of what is The Athletic, what's going on, okay, deeper stories, what does that mean? How do we try to do it? Will people read it? To go from that to feeling like, you know, I know my way around the building, you know, I have good relationships with people who work here. I mean, it's been a great ride, and I hope it's a long one.
A lot of what sports coverage is the day-to-day stuff. You've, and lots of people have done it before, but you seem to have embraced getting into the personal lives of the players and getting to know them a little bit away from the ice, which is not the easiest thing to do, right? There's some trust built up in there. How much have you enjoyed doing it, and how long did it take you in your mind to get players to open up to you the way that they have?
Man, it's been a long road since I think my first ever interview was with Adam Lowry,
mm-hmm.
2017-18. It was him, Andrew Kopp, and Brandon Tanev was just the line that was
the best,
right?
And, yeah,
you know, that line has gotten to that height, or maybe even more again because of Nino Niederreiter, like, mm-hmm. And just to be welcomed with the sort of grace and warmth of Adam Lowry, even though I'm sure I was a nervous interviewer at that time, and then to see the stages of like, okay, now these guys, you know a little bit about them. Maybe you know an agent, maybe you know family members or what have you. I don't know if I'm answering the question, Jamie, but like, yeah. My favorite thing about this whole gig is when you talk to these guys like they are people, they express a feeling. I'm like, oh, you know what? That reminds me of this thing you said, or yeah. I've been through that thing too. Let's go there. And guys have been willing mostly.
Well, how challenging was it for you when you were interviewing Josh about his dad, Tom? Because that's a very emotional subject, right? So I'm sure you didn't expect it to turn out the way it did, but what was it like that time with Josh?
I mean, so the basis of that interview was, I think it was like a 2 or 3 hour phone conversation. And of course, I knew at that time his dad had passed away. Same summer, days away, one of my best friend's dad had also passed away.
So you're in that mode?
Very much.
Yeah, yeah.
Feeling the tragedy scope, talking to my friend, what would you have wanted? How would you want me to approach this? And not everybody's experience is the same, but that helped inform kind of the space that we got into.
Because you have to, in order to get the best out of somebody or get information, you kind of have to have that experience. You have to be in that place, right?
Yeah.
In some ways, don't you think?
I think so. I think that people, there's like the surface conversation, and then there's the conversation that you're willing to have when you feel understood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those things are different. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not the same. I mean, my dad is still with us, but, you know, three of my very, very, very close friends have died too. So I told Josh about that, mm-hmm. on the phone, and to try to establish something, I guess, that I wasn't just here to exploit his experience.
Yeah.
Like, so I honestly think, Jamie, we both cried at a different point of that call, talked about the impact of the hockey community on helping you get through things. And I normally don't share drafts with people before I publish things, but in a case that delicate, I definitely felt like I had to. And I think when Josh read it and saw how much energy and effort and heart went into it, it helped open up even another layer. He shared a video of him skating with his dad, one of their last skates.
Oof.
After that.
That must have been tough to watch, in terms of
just all of the feelings. You're so happy that they have the moment that you're watching, and you know what it means that's, you know, towards the end of them being able to do that. It's overwhelming.
Like on another note too, just the piece you did with Shifley and Perfetti, it's clear, and it has kind of always has felt like Shifley and Perfetti would be friends from the day Perfetti was drafted. Do you not think that?
I mean, it was written, right? I mean, Crystal Howardchuk announces Cole Perfetti's name. I mean, that's such a perfect link. And to have Perfetti renowned even before he got to Winnipeg for being such a hockey nerd, right? I mean, he can talk in expected goals. He can do all that sort of stuff. Mark Scheifele, nobody's hungrier to improve his play than him. So you hope that they become friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see it actually happen and those guys sort of share the bonding moments that go into what their friendship is. Like,
pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was. I remember talking to Scheifele after the extension was announced, and he said one of his favorite things was telling Cole that he signed the contract. And that there's the personality, there's the person inside Mark Scheifele that I don't think we get to see a lot. So the fact that you did it, and I appreciate where that comes from. So we haven't talked a whole lot about the Jets in this aspect, but they do have kind of a challenging week ahead. They play Carolina today, the day we're taping this podcast. They have Colorado on Thursday, and I believe Anaheim on Saturday on that road trip. So on Sunday against the Anaheim Ducks, who are not a pushover by any means right now. So the schedule continues to be challenging for Winnipeg. I saw a graphic or a stat the other day. It looks like they've had one of the most challenging schedules so far this year. How have they handled it, in your opinion?
I mean, I think it's been a really strong start to the season.
Yeah.
I think that they've handled tough competition well, and they've beaten the teams on the days that they should beat. Like, we're coming off of beating Chicago or that Jets win on Saturday, and that's a game that the Winnipeg Jets absolutely must win. 2 points they must bank, and so they get that job done. And then I like that they've highlighted the moments where it hasn't worked out. Like, they point to that first game against Dallas.
Yes.
And they're talking about their patience. They didn't quite execute. They got countered. It didn't work the way that they wanted to. And I like those standard-bearing type games. It reminds me of how they used to talk about Nashville when both of those teams were towards the top of the Western Conference. And I like that they're willing to strive in that way. And other than that, I mean, the 5-on-5 game started off on fire, has been excellent. I think that some of this tough competition has eroded that to just merely good as opposed to amazing. And then Connor Hellebuck's heating up. You like to see that. It's really just the PK. You fix the PK, you give up less goals on the PK, and I think that the team's within inches of soaring.
Dylan Sandberg said they're just not being aggressive enough. Do you see that often when you watch the Jets go on the penalty kill?
Yeah, it's interesting because sometimes they look like
last year this was their strength. This is what they built off of.
And it's not meant to be a whole lot different, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's an interesting element. I didn't see them get pulled out of their formation last year as much as you see it now. And maybe it's they want to be more aggressive and they're getting caught between thoughts. So they're like half taking a step into the space but leaving space behind them, or their timing is wrong. But they're getting seamed. Like, passes are going through seams with more regularity, I would say, this year than last.
You are going on the trip. It's a special one for you. Your better half is in the California area. Just what's that been like, juggling that and doing? I mean, it's a very convenient road trip around. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. I put in for every LA area road trip. That's
so odd.
Yeah. One Haley Jean Penner lives there. And of course, her dad, Fred, is well-known to many Winnipeggers. And I think even True North is promoting one of his concerts coming in December. So small world. And of course, yeah, it's nice to stay at home, have home cooking, you know, take your own car or her car to the rink and all that sort of stuff.
It's sweet. That's great. I'm glad you get to do that. Thank you so much for doing this. And I'm sure we'll have you on a lot more as this rolls along.
Thanks, JB.
Marat Ateş up next. Our good friend Kevin Sawyer. It's going to be a fun one. We'll see you after this.
Hi, I'm Nikolai Ehlers.
What a goal from Nikolai Ehlers.
And this is the Ground Control Podcast.
Kevin Sawyer is on the way. Before we get to that interview, it's time for our play of the week. And for that play of the week in the game against the Chicago Blackhawks, Declan Chisholm recorded his first ever NHL point and assist. It was an all Manitoba Moose graduate goal. Here's the play of the week from Cole Perfetti.
Where Sandberg was on that play.
Winnipeg wins the draw. Velarde back toward the line for Sandberg. Wrist shot toward the net. He scores!
Well, and if it is Perfetti's goal, it's going to set a new career high for him. It'll be his ninth of the season.
I use this term lightly, but our special guest on this podcast is Kevin Sawyer. It's been a long time. We have not done this since the hotel room
in
New York.
Is there a reason for it being so long?
I couldn't tell you. I've taken full control over this, and I asked Mitch all the time. I said, you should have Kevin Sarr on the podcast, and he didn't listen.
Always no.
That's why Mitch is in the broadcast booth now. We're like, you know what, Mitch? You're getting this job now. Anyways, Mitchell Clinton, of course, the color analyst of the Winnipeg Jets on 680 CJOB and Power 97 we're talking about. Welcome back. Things have changed a little bit for you in the broadcast booth. You have extra duties now.
Yeah.
How have you enjoyed asking questions now on a microphone in front of people instead of just asking questions to players and coaches in the dressing room?
You know what's funny is that looks so easy, and it really shouldn't be that hard. Mm-hmm. And there's so much to think about. First of all, I love it because you have a rapport with the guys and you get to ask whatever you want. But it's funny because you're listening to your producer in one ear, mm-hmm. right? And he's counting you down. Meanwhile, the player's standing beside you, so you're having a little conversation with them while you're waiting, trying to keep them interested. And then you're all the while trying to think about what you're going to ask them. And then you don't listen at all to what they're saying.
Nope.
Because no, you know this is
yes.
Because yeah. all you're thinking about is, what am I going to ask them?
Yeah. And did he answer the question? And the producer's like, 30 seconds.
And the worst thing about it, too, is when they're talking to you and you're staring blankly in their eyes. You're like, I can't remember.
And they pretty much know
I can't remember what I was going to ask him next.
Yeah, yeah, I know exactly. I got not a great story, but when I was hosting Flames games, we used to have the coach after the first intermission, after every game, or in every game. And so Jim Playfair was coaching the Flames at the time. He comes off the ice.
Coach of mine, good dude.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. The Flames are down 2-0 to Arizona, Phoenix Coyotes at the time. So I have to wait till the producer counts down, as you know about this. He says 30 seconds, and Jim Playfair is like, let's go. And I'm like, Larry, Jim wants to go right now. And
he's a big dude, too.
He's a big dude. He was mad. His nostrils were flaring because they weren't playing well. And I'm like, can we go? He's like, let's go. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked him a question. He's totally normal. Ugh. So, but the pressure at that moment where people don't realize that, because it's pre-recorded, and you're like, and you're sweating because you don't want to, it's their time that you're cutting into. So, you have to react quickly, and you're 100% right. Half the time you're not really listening, but I feel sometimes players aren't really listening to what we're asking either.
Good point. I said to Mason Appleton after one question I asked him, I went blank and I just started talking, and I eventually got to a question and he answered it. The next day I went up to Appy. I'm like, hey, thanks for not throwing me under the bus, dude. I can't even remember what I asked you. He goes, it's funny. I never remember what I said. It worked out fine.
Because of the situation, they're preparing for a game. So I can understand where they're not focused. And then after periods, what do you find the biggest difference between pregame and during a game interviews?
Yeah. So it's funny because I've always felt like, even though I've played, I'm still a guest, right? So you're going into their space and they're preparing to play, right? So,
yes.
So you don't want to interrupt, disrupt, and you want to keep it between the lines. So pre-game, you can ask maybe a little bit lighter questions, but still you got to keep things relatively game-driven, where a lot of the times you just want to joke with them and keep it light, but you got to make sure that you stay relevant and stay on cue. So sometimes it's tough because you don't want to be dry and boring, but sometimes you got to be dry and boring. And I mean, that's not the right way to put it, but you just got to be on point, ask hockey questions.
You said I could ask you anything, so here I go. Here we go. Biggest difference between Dan Robertson and Dennis Bayak?
Oh, well, there's a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. Biggest difference, oh boy.
That's something you have to get used to. Let's go with that.
Dennis pregame, I love messing around with Dennis and poking him and making him laugh and insulting his suit and his ties, all of it.
Yeah.
And it was just like he'd always give me the old like... Look at me in the corner of the
eye. Yeah, I know the look.
Together, it was the best.
Yeah,
Dan loves, and he's so much fun. But there's only one period of his day where you can get him rattled, and it's in his press box. When you go into his space, he is all he's printing. He's and if I just go up to him and just be like, "Touch him, hey Dan, how's it going today?" And he's just such a great sport.
Yeah,
but he'll be like growly a little bit, and I love it. So it's like, but you know what? They're both so witty. I think it's a play-by-play thing where they're just quick-witted, and they have they got great comebacks.
For some reason, they have to think on their feet, whereas. Yeah. You and I, when I used to do the job, you're just like, I just had to fill 10 seconds.
I'm going to talk about what I just saw.
They have to go and tell everybody what's happening, whereas you and I just, I think I saw this.
Yeah.
That's how I feel this happened.
I don't know how they do. Honest to God, I always say this. Like, I don't know how they do what they do. I've sometimes sit at home on my couch and I'll be like, I'm just going to try to do play-by-play. It's ridiculous. You'd never do it.
Hardest job in the world. I will say this right now. It's not even close. And I think of all the pressure they're under, and if they say a player's name wrong, or people will listen to that stuff, I've always found that the thing that you shouldn't worry about as a fan, someone says mispronounces a name, is like they talk all night. And I think you have to give a little bit of leeway, because even in our normal day conversations, we're going to mess up a word. Like I just said, ormal instead of normal.
Ormal, yeah.
Yeah. That's all about talking fast.
Let's start that again.
No, let's do this. Favorite coach you played for when you're in the National Hockey League?
A lot of great ones. But the first one that I ever had full time was Brian Murray.
Mm-hmm.
And he was such, rest his soul, of course, he's not with us anymore, but he was such a kind man. And he would find ways to push buttons in different ways. He had a really dry sense of humor, but I'll never forget the first phone call he gave me. I was in the hotel room in Anaheim, and he called me and told me to get a place to live, which meant you finally made it. But he always found a way to kind of joke with me. He would compliment me with humor, and I like that. Like, I like to be kept loose because, you know, with the role I played was always so serious and grave in some ways. So he found a way to push my buttons in a way that kept me light. Like I said, a lot. I feel like I owe something to all of my coaches that I've had. But Brian Murray stands out for me as just such a guy that you would go to the ends of the earth to please him. You know what I mean? I think that's a mark of a really good coach.
The enforcer role is literally almost disappeared from the National Hockey League right now. Yeah. So when you played, it was there and it was prevalent in hockey. How did the players, your teammates, treat you knowing that was what you did? Was there...
Yeah, you know what? I think that's... Because it would be really easy to kind of show the separation between, you know, the Paul Kariyas and the Kevin Sawyers as far as, you know, ice time or value in what Paul does versus what I did. But the compression between your top lines and your bottom kind of guys, I think the smaller that is, the tighter the team was. And so I always felt like maybe I wasn't as important sometimes just because you're just not on the ice as much.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's one of the things where teammates – almost always showed so much appreciation because they're like, I don't know how you do that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Nightly kind of go into that knowing that, well, there's a chance that I could really seriously get hurt, or, you know, maybe your career comes to an end that night. And those are things you try to fend off in your head while you're doing this. But teammates and coaches they understand because they're out there with you. They have a front row seat to what you go through. And I mean, you got a guy like Stu Grimson that skates by your bench and he's growling at the bench and everybody knows, oh, so he's just got to go out there and deal with that.
Yeah.
So nothing but love, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So was there ever a time where you didn't want to do it anymore? It was like you're getting real tired of doing it and a teammate said something to you that kind of kept you going, if that makes sense.
You know what? That's one of the toughest parts of the job is learning to want to do it and learning. Like, here's the funny thing I found through my career. I always felt that I was abnormal with it because you're around guys that did it and nobody ever admitted fear. They're like, I'm not afraid. And I'm like, well, why am I so afraid every day? And then you realize after you retire and maybe guys grow up and they're you realize that they were all afraid too. So it was just about dealing with fear and learning to function under fear. And that's the truth. Like, you don't ever want to tell your kids or anybody, be like, hey, yeah, like you're afraid and learn how to live with it.
Mm-hmm.
You'd probably say, like, try to, you know, it's probably not realistic or it's not, you know, real. Like, but it was real. So there was real fear. So you learn how to live with it. There was only one time I didn't want to do it truly, like where I'm like, I'm done with this. And I went to training camp in St. Louis, my second bout. I went to St. Louis twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, if I can't play hockey without doing this as a role, I don't think I want to play hockey anymore. And it was funny because every training camp I went to, I played almost every exhibition game. And whether I made the team out of the training camp for a while or not, I was there for a long time. I was one of the first cuts that year. I just didn't play with snap. And then I realized, okay, well, I have to accept who I am and embrace it. So I did. Thankfully, listen, I got no regrets. It was giving me an opportunity to play.
It seems like one of the greatest moments in a long National Hockey League season when a fourth line player scores a goal. What was that like when you went back?
You know what it was like.
Here comes my favorite conversation.
We've talked about this,
folks. We're not putting the video up of MSG, by the way.
Oh, my goodness. Every time.
Monsters lost that video. So anyways, get going. We'll see it later this year.
It's forever etched in my brain.
Take us through your first goal. Anyways, but the emotion on the bench when you go back.
Yeah, like, so the puck is in your hand a minute later, right? You're on the bench, and it's such a blur. Like, you cannot believe that you just scored a goal in the National Hockey League, number one. Guys are hugging you, and the coaches. It was sensory overload just because you're laughing. You can't believe it. You almost want to cry. All of your family is flashing through your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I got the puck, I kissed it. I did. And Brian,
that was your Stanley Cup.
That was my Stanley Cup. Brian Murray came up to me after. He's like, "Take it easy. Let's keep this between the lines here. Don't get too funny." Like, okay, that was one. That was just one. Like,
there was only five more after that, right?
Five. Just two. But I think that you're referring to the disallowed goals.
Yes,
they were questionable. Okay. Questionable. So five. Let's go with five. Sure.
If there was replay this day, you'd have seven. So. But just like – so the two goals, because the best – I love going to the interview.
I'm
going to
cut you off because I got to tell you quickly about one of the most embarrassing goals ever scored in the National Hockey League. Do I have time for this?
You sure do.
We were in Atlanta, and I was driving the middle of the ice. Puck enters wide. It may have been Dan Bylsma. Shoots it on net, and the rebound went like 25 feet into the air. And I'm like in the high slot, and it's so far above my head. I reach up with my stick, and I leave my feet, and I – just catch it like a lacrosse stick, and I just cradle it, and I just whip it right into the net. I mean, you could not get a higher high stick, and it was like it flashed the net, and it was so abnormal that there was just like this weird kind of like, ugh, what just? And I remember I was going so fast, I whipped it in the net, and I kind of put my hands up. I'm like,
yeah, that's not going to count.
And then as I skate by the bench, by the Thrashers, they're like. I'm like, God.
That's embarrassing.
I think it should have counted. I was going to argue with the ref, but anyway, I just left it. Sorry, go on.
Well, now, because you play with some pretty great players. So how I asked you the biggest difference between Dennis Bayak and Dan Robertson. How about the biggest difference between Brett Hall and Paul Kariya?
Oh, wow. Great question.
Yeah, thank you.
My first year in St. Louis, I got called up 10 different times. Mike Keenan was the coach and the GM. Remember my first day, their dressing room was huge by all standards back in those days. This is in 95. And I'm in the trainer's room just trying to look like I belong. And there's a piece of tape down the wall with numbers on it. And it said massages. And I'm like, oh, should I ask for a massage? Shouldn't I ask for a massage? And Holly's over there with like McInnes and Fuhr. It was a team full of stars that year.
Oh, my gosh.
And Holly's like, look at Sawyer. He's looking for his messages. And I was just like, oh, God. Like, so that's Brett Hall. I can go on and on about Brett Hall. He was awesome. One time we were in St. Louis. This is, again, my first year. And he stopped practice. And because I know that I was one of the guys that gave a bad pass. But there was a few guys that were giving bad passes. So he stopped practice. Mike Keenan's the coach, by the way. And he says, if you can't make a pass, go back to the minors. This is the
Hall,
NHL.
Hall did that?
Yeah, and he was talking to everybody, but I felt like he was looking right into my soul. If you can't
How did you stay on the ice after that?
Oh, I already gripped my stick pretty tight.
Yes.
I had, finger marks in my stick after. Oh. And so then the other side, Paul Kariya, I remember the first time that I got called up in Anaheim. He didn't say a word to me. And I was just like, oh, my God, this is not very welcoming. And it kind of bothered me, to be honest with you.
Of course.
So after a couple of days, we're skating around before practice, and I'm just like, I don't know. So I went up to him, and I remember I gave him a bit of a slash across the knees. I'm like, hey, Paulie, how you doing? And it was almost like he snapped out of a trance. He goes, Soizy, how are you, man? How's everything going? He's so dialed in and focused that he's almost not with you sometimes because he's just – it's amazing the detail that goes into his day, but not very boisterous. We ended up being really close by the end of my time in Anaheim, but he's not the vocal kind of leader that kind of lightens you up. He's super, super dialed in. So big, big differences.
All right. So this is the interesting part of this podcast. We're going to break off here, and it's going to be called Playground Insults.
Oh.
Yeah, I stole this from a podcast somewhere, believe it or not. This is not my original idea. We're going to insult each other. We have a ref. Mitchell Clinton is coming in. Funny that we mentioned him a little bit earlier. So I'd like to tell everybody that this is like, we're not going to be mean-spirited. We don't mean this. Maybe we do. Maybe we don't. I think I know you as well as I think I do. You might mean the things you say, but we're going to tell everybody it's the holidays, everybody. We're just trying to make you laugh. Enjoy.
Welcome to the first ever ground control version of Playground Insults featuring Jamie Thomas. and Kevin Sawyer. How this will all break down is they will stare each other in the eyes, kind of like they're doing right now, and insult each other. And the first one to break, slash laugh, slash giggle, well, perhaps we'll allow giggling, will lose, and will certainly not have it held against them for the rest of the season.
You're going to weep.
Now, you two gentlemen decide who goes first.
You're the guest. Go first.
Thank you, Jamie.
Actually, before we even start here.
Yeah.
Hypothetically, if we could go back to the beginning of the day and we could start the day all over again, and you're at home, you're in your closet, you're choosing what you're going to wear, would you choose that shirt again? If you can go back.
You're a poor man's Ray Ferraro.
Ouch.
I feel like...
These glasses come with a kickstand.
Devastating.
Have you ever noticed that the original crew that you worked with at TSN is now gone?
Oh.
Sarah Orleski, and you forced Dennis back into retirement because you smell like baby barf.
Okay. You had me at the beginning, but lost me at the end. What do you miss more from being on the road, Jamie? Hijacking peanut butter and jam sandwiches off the plane. Or tuna salad sandwiches.
Don't look at other people. Don't look at other people.
From Target. Off day meals at Target.
You know, those are my favorite. I love Target tuna sandwiches. Mm-hmm. You and Brett Hull combined for 44 goals in 95-96. How many of those goals did you score?
Okay. I can't decide if you are more of a poor man's Jeff Goldblum or if you're going for a Carol Channing look.
Okay. Okay.
Let me know when you need a hand. I'll help you take him off.
All right. You're quicker now than you were on your skates in the NHL.
I don't even know if these are insults. I mean, I've grown to accept a lot of this.
Last one.
Honestly, I was half expecting that you would have had a haircut coming into this because we're on television.
Yeah.
A little disappointing, but my question to you is, did you comb your hair with a balloon today?
That's playground insults, everybody. That'll do it for this edition of Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets. Our thanks to Kevin Sawyer, Murat Attash, us today's guest, next week's guest, Dean Stewart, and Jeff Malott of the Manitoba Moose. We're going to play Catan. Yeah, that's right, on the podcast. We'll see you next week.